Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snack Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. Thankful I am that you are joining us wherever you may be, listening on Stitcher, on Spotify, on Google, on Apple, on iHeart, whatever way you get your podcasts. It is much appreciated that you are checking us out here on GBB Live, part of the GBB Podcast Network. We have 3&D, we have Core 4, we have Starting 5, and of course the flagship that I've been doing entirely too long, 8 years now. Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Again, your host, Joe Mullinax, site manager over at grizzlybearblues.com. And I'm joined at this time by my co-host of this podcast, the associate editor of grizzlybearblues.com, Mr. Parker Fleming. Parker, we've had an interesting week since last we spoke. Justice Winslow has left the rotation. Grizzlies Twitter has found new ways to be toxic towards a team that is extremely young and overachieving. And we continue to grind forth, good sir. How are you doing?
You know, I'm pretty good, and I'm just trying to stick with the positives because I think everything this season is just gravy. So,
hashtag Bryce Hayes, hashtag NXT Prodigy, hashtag Power Positivity. I'm with you. It's crazy how things have gotten, and we'll get our guests' take on that before we get into the main meat and potatoes of the show. Here in a moment. Ways to get in touch with the show. You can follow us on Twitter at GBB Live. You can follow the blog that Parker and I are fortunate enough to write for and work for, the great team that has done phenomenal work, including Happy Sean Coleman Day. Sean randomly did not schedule very well, or maybe he meant to do it on purpose, but 3 posts in one day for Sean Coleman. Lots of great talented folks over at grizzlybearblues.com. Follow the blog at SBN Grizzlies. You can follow Parker at Paka_Flocka, and you can follow me on Twitter if you choose to at Joe Mullinax. And our guest at this time is one of the very best podcasters out there. He does a remarkable job covering the Grizzlies. He has the Grits and Grinds, He has the Grits and Grinds podcast over on Blue Wire Pods. He also has the Fast Break Breakfast podcast. He really is fantastic. You can follow Fast Break Breakfast at Fast Break Break. This is Mr. Keith Parrish. Keith, how are you doing, sir? It's good to see you rising above the toxicity that is Grizzlies Twitter these days.
Well, first of all, thank you, Joe. Thanks, Parker, for having me. Happy to be here. I refuse toxicity. I mean, I like to criticize players, but if I can't do it with a joke, just don't do it. That's also my entire Twitter strategy. Like, either give interesting information or give information that has a joke. If you can't come up with a joke, just don't do it. So let's always positive. And I know you guys are talking about the Grizzlies Twitter toxicity. I would just like to point out it's literally every fan base in sport.
Right.
It's just sports fans. But anyway, I think that's a
fair point to make in fairness to Grizzlies fans. And obviously this didn't necessarily exist until Twitter. You had message boards before that, of course, but you had sports talk radio. Sports talk radio doesn't exist without fans that have this kind of mentality. Obviously this podcast doesn't exist. Neither does yours, Keith. And it's important to keep that perspective. I think the toxicity that I'm referencing, and Keith, you don't see this as much because you're humorous. People enjoy Fast Break Breakfast and the way that you guys do the show. We have different styles. And I think folks dislike me at times, and they dislike my takes. I have a different perspective on things, and people make it personal. And I'm not, obviously that happens to people beyond me. and folks that, you know, especially women I've noticed that cover the Grizzlies deal with this a lot, whether it's our Molly Morrison or, you know, even, you know, Shy and Amy over at the Memphis Flyer. There's folks that will get certain levels of toxicity and anger that other people don't get. And obviously, if you're a Chris Harrington and you're one of the best writers about the Grizzlies, that's a little bit different. But you can see how there's twinges of things. And it is in every fan base. But it's just fascinating to see how somebody that you like could say something. And you're like, oh, man, that's a great point. I'm with you on that. And then somebody that maybe you're not as fond of says a similar thing. And because of that inherent bias you have against that person or that source of information, maybe it discredits it. So it's really a fascinating study in fan bias in addition to fan perspective.
Yeah. I mean, I just try to always be positive when I'm on social media. I liberally use the mute button. I also don't argue much on Twitter. Like, I post a good bit on Twitter, but I have a firm rule that I will reply twice. And if I can't express it in two replies, well, we're done. Like, I can say your opinion. I've heard your opinion. Here's my opinion. Yeah, now we're done. And you know, if it's like a good friend, we could go on for a while, but not normally. I like posting things. A lot of times it's funny, especially with the negative interactions. I like posting like a stat that I find, or I'm like, this is interesting. And it's often just a stat with no context or no explanation, but people interpret it in a bad way. And then people are like, why are you always so negative about this person? I'm like, that's a thing that happened.
Right.
Like, that's just a thing that happened. You can draw whatever conclusion you want from the thing. And so, I mean, I enjoy doing that to a degree, but also, I don't know, maybe I do skate or skirt above the fray a little bit with like negative conversations just because I don't engage. And it's like, if you're going to be like rude or unpleasant, I'm probably not going to reply. And that probably will be the last time I see your reply. Cause I just like, I've thousands and thousands of people muted. So.
Well, I think your perspective on it is healthier than mine as well, because even after all this time, I am still very, very much, not that person. And I've probably wasted countless hours.
Well, I was bullied a lot in junior high. So I built those scars. So
fair enough.
I'm good now.
That makes sense. At 6'2", 290, I wasn't bullied a ton. So
I was, maybe
I don't have that scar tissue.
I was like 6'4", 120.
Oh, so, there you go. Yeah. See, I mean, you had the height on them. You had the leverage advantage. So, Keith, we're excited to have you on. And I think Keith makes a great point about all fan bases being this way. So if you're passionate about your team, you're going to have interactions like that. Sometimes it's just good to keep perspective. The focus of this show, it's going to be a little bit different structure this week. We're just going to have one straight segment where we talk about one bit of work that was done over at grizzlybearblues.com. And I'm the boss over at grizzlybearblues.com, so I can decide at times to focus on my work, and that's exactly what we're going to do here. Three ways to fix the Memphis Grizzlies. I sat down, and as I often do, I wrote an opus. I wrote a 2,500-word thing that my former bosses who I used to work for would hate. They would tell me, Joe, this could be multiple articles. Why are you doing this in one? Now I do it because I'm the boss, and until my boss tells me to stop, I will do it at times. And it's 2,500 words. If you got through it, as some people did, it seems like they enjoyed it. And there's three things that I reference as ways to fix the Grizzlies. And the three major fixes I have are Jaren Jackson Jr. starting, which obviously Wednesday night against the Timberwolves, a big win for the Grizzlies. That wasn't going to happen because Jaren was sitting out. But tonight, and we record this on a Thursday morning, this is an opportunity for Jaren to potentially start, especially considering the injury status of one Grayson Allen. We're not sure what Grayson is going to be doing as of this recording. And if news did come out on that, you guys can correct me here in a moment. I haven't been able to see it yet. So starting Jaren would be number one, and we can talk a little bit about that. Number two was Kyle being that hypothetical Justice Winslow player that I believe, Keith, I've heard you talk about in the past. I know Chris Harrington has talked about it in the past. Other folks have referenced this. You know, it's Justice Winslow for this front office. Kyle Anderson is doing what essentially they wanted Justice Winslow to do. So let Kyle do that and let him continue to be that, especially as a reserve if you're starting Jaren Jackson Jr. And then number three was getting Brandon Clark going. And this was the big one that we saw happen last night. Brandon Clark had two games of DNP CDs. It was a coach's decision. He wasn't on an injury report. That's why he received that designation. But to me, Keith, and we can lead off with this, it's like they knew that Brandon was banged up and they wanted to give him a little bit of time to heal up some. That maybe they didn't say that. I didn't catch. And Parker, I know you're in the post-game media availability. Maybe you can give some insights into that if Coach was asked directly about that. But from my interpretation, it looks like that's exactly what happened. They let him rest up. And he looked better last night than he has in a long time, Keith. So to me, getting Brandon Clarke going, his ceiling is so much higher even than X's. You know, Xavier Tillman's had a great season, but Clarke is just a better basketball player. To me, that one maybe is the most underrated of the three. Everybody's going to shout to the heavens that Jaren Jackson Jr. should start, and eventually he will. But from my perception, especially with that bench unit, if you hope to make some noise in the play-in tournament, eventually the playoffs, you need a Brandon Clarke who's pretty much the same player that he was, or at least close to it, in that 2019-2020 season.
Yeah, when you say that the Brandon Clarke issue might be the most underrated, I think what I'll say, I think it's the least important. I don't think it's underrated. I think the other two are way more important, obviously. I think the first one, Jaren Jackson Jr., yeah, I think the Grizzlies, whatever play and success they have, whatever fight they might put up in the playoffs, or if they finish with the whimper like they finished last season with the whimper, that's all I think going to come down to Jaren Jackson Jr. and them getting him up to speed. And I think it's kind of funny like how they keep saying we're trying out these different things and they've lost four straight with him coming off the bench. And it's like, what are we doing here?
Might be time to start trying the starting thing.
Why don't we sort of, but as far as specifically to Brandon Clarke, the reason I think it's the least important is I don't feel as passionately that he has to get going for this team, you know, to maybe achieve their full potential this specific season. It's been a letdown recently, but I also think some of that, as far as his performance, was the specifics of the game. He had to play. I mean, he's totally lost his shot. That is clear. He's no longer a threat from three. And he was playing on these lineups sometimes with Justice Winslow, sometimes with Jonas Valanciunas. Like, they actually ran out a couple times where there was like Justice and Jonas and Brandon, and you're like, this is not going to work for anyone. Like, no one on the court is going to do that great here. So as far as him being secretly injured, I don't believe that, because if you get like a hangnail, you miss two games on the Grizzlies this year. So I feel like they would have reported that injury.
Again, he was not on the injury report.
Right.
Like, that is important to point out.
We see Dwight Howard falls on D'Anthony Melton and you're watching the game. You're like, yeah, he's out for 2 weeks. And Grayson Allen hurt his hand and it was surprising he stayed in the game, but it's like, well, he has a banged up hand. It seems like this year maybe these guys literally cannot play, but it seems like they'll use any excuse to kind of thin the roster. So Taylor Jenkins' job is simpler when it comes to making the rotation decisions. So, I mean, against Minnesota, you know, Brandon Clarke did look a little springier. His offense was there. He still missed a couple of really easy floaters, which has kind of been all right. He's not going to make 60% of them like he did last year, but it does seem like he's lost the touch a little bit there. But I think it was more just the lineups. The lineups were a little bit cleaner. If he's playing just with another big, if it's just him and like Kyle out there, or if it's him with Tillman, like that's a much cleaner fit. And if Winslow's not your three, or Winslow's not your point guard, not to pile on Winslow, I just think it makes a lot more sense. Pairing him with Tyus Jones last season, was kind of everything. And also pairing him with Kyle Anderson. I remember last year people were joking that Kyle Anderson is the only one who passes the ball to Brandon Clarke. Like, he's the only one who finds Brandon Clarke. And so you saw some of those lineups, and I think that specifically led to the success of Brandon Clarke and, you know, the Timberwolves' lack of defense.
Yeah, the whole not playing defense thing was tough for the Timberwolves. Parker, I know you're a big proponent of freeing Brandon Clarke. I do think, for clarity's sake, when it comes to ranking the three between Jaren Jackson Jr. starting, Kyle Anderson being what the front office and coaching staff wanted Justice Winslow to be, and Brandon Clarke getting going, I agree with Keith that that's the third thing on the list. And that's how it worked out in the GBB Live question of the day voting. Jaren was number one with a bullet. Kyle was number two. And we can talk more about that here in a moment. But I do think that Brandon Clarke, Keith mentioned Brandon and X playing together. In my research for the article, I was surprised that Brandon and X had played as well as they had, because they're two undersized bigs. I think Matt Hardlicka mentioned how the Grizzlies were playing three guards and two power forwards, essentially, in Clarke and X last night. And it was a difference in styles to what Minnesota was trying to do, but there's been success with that. Clark and Tillman play well together. So it's going to be interesting as they reintegrate these guys into the fold and they have a fully healthy roster. Two of these dudes are not going to play. And, you know, it used to be said that it's going to be Desmond Bane, but Desmond Bane, the last two games, has arguably played his best two-game stretch of the entire season. So it sounds crazy to say Desmond Bane's not going to play. People like to poo-poo the technical term on Grayson Allen, but Grayson has been consistently what Taylor Jenkins has wanted almost this entire season. He's gotten cold of late, and maybe that's the benefit of depth as you can ride that hot hand. But Brandon Clark, to me, and you've mentioned this, Parker, and I mentioned it in the article, in conversations with national writers, folks that are much smarter than me, they've reached out to me privately and they've said, Brandon Clark is the third untouchable on the Grizzlies. It's Jaw, it's Jaren, and then it's Brandon. I'm not making that up. I'm not trying to make myself sound more important than I am. That's just a true statement. We can debate that if he should be that. And again, that was several months ago. Maybe things have changed with Brandon's regression in the shooting touch, especially like Keith alluded to. But Brandon Clark, to me, on that bench unit, he brings elements that if we're talking about what the Grizzlies do best, playing in transition, getting out and moving, malleability defensively, Clark is that guy, and he does it better than X. He's lost his shooting touch, that's fair, but getting Brandon Clark moving and active, Parker, that to me remains a priority, although I agree that it is the third of the list between starting Jaren and Kyle being that Justice Winslow point forward type.
Absolutely right with that. I mean, it's non-negotiable at this point that Jaren should start. I know this is something I'll probably get into later, but Jaren is not at his best at the four. I'm looking at cleaning the glass right now. They are the equivalent of a one-win team when he's running the power forward spot. Grant, that's also a 37-minute sample size. That's not substantial or anything. But I do think it's important to get Brandon Clark going. I will say, to Keith's point, a lot of it was the lineups. I mean, they're pulling Tyus Jones out of the lineup or at least taking the ball out of his hands to get Winslow going. But of all the non-John Morant stats, the biggest assist combo per PBP stats is Tyus Jones and Brandon Clark at 46 assists. It's important. I think the reason why that X and Clark pairing works so well is probably something that, Joe, you allude to all the time, and that's the drop coverage, because Tillman and Clark, they can both switch. I think they're both underrated rebounders, even though they're both 6'8". And I think Clark does bring value offensively, even though he's lost his touch. He's a threat around the rim, and he's also grown as a playmaker. He takes care of the ball. I talked about this the other night with Brandon Abraham, and that Brandon Clark's assist, it's more of a pass creation instead of flow of the offense. We can get into more of that later, but I do think when it comes to the bench unit, it's important that Brandon Clark gets going. So, but it's also the third on the list.
I like Parker when you said Jaren at the four, they're equivalent to a one-win team. Jaren, when he plays, they're literally a one-win team. They're 1-5. No, yep. I feel like the Brandon Clark issue and trying to find him minutes and maybe prioritizing him over Tillman, I think it actually ties into, Joe, your second point about let Kyle Anderson do the Justice Winslow thing. And this is like this has become a pet peeve of mine where everyone kind of admits, like, Kyle Anderson, it looks smoother, looks better playing at the power forward. And that's why we have this log jam. But Kyle Anderson is clearly, I'd say he's your third best player, maybe your fourth best player. At the very least on the season, he's in your top four players on your team. But they seem very hampered with the idea of playing positionless basketball, despite saying over and over and over, we don't believe in positions. They say, everyone can play, is interchangeable. And so the idea of we're not going to play Kyle Anderson at the three because he doesn't fit as well has become kind of frustrating to me, where it's like, okay, we don't have the perfect system players maybe for what Taylor Jenkins wants to do, but we do have Kyle Anderson and we do have Xavier Tillman and Brandon Clark and Jaren Jackson Jr. and Jonas Valanciunas, and those are all good players. And I think in a vacuum, you're like, those players are maybe better than some of our wings. And so I don't know why they've been so hesitant, especially in this quote unquote data accumulation season, to actually experiment. They're not actually experimenting in my mind. Like, they haven't done a lot of three. At the end of the Minnesota game, maybe because Jenkins was loath to put Melton back in the game, but he's like, okay, you know what? Clark's played well. Tillman's played well. Or, you know, Jonas has fouled out. We're actually going to have Kyle play the three for the last couple of minutes. And I've always been controversially under the belief, play your best players. Like, just play your best players. Like, I don't, you know, Grayson Allen, the fit's good. And like, the starting line has been great when Grayson Allen's out there. But also, like, when it comes down to it, just play your best players. And if Kyle at the three and the Grizzlies offense falls apart and they lose, it's like, okay, but we played our best players. And so I think, you know, if Justice Winslow, you think is one of your best players, okay, play him. I don't think he is, but it's just like, don't overthink this stuff for me. And if you play Kyle more at the three, then there are more minutes for Brandon Clark to get in more. And maybe you could play Tillman and Clark and Jonas and Jaren if Kyle's playing the three. Then of course you're kicking out some of that wing rotation. You know, Melton's minutes go from 18 to 8 or something, or Grayson Allen. I mean, Grayson Allen might be hurt. I'm worried about Grayson because, again, I was joking about the Grizzlies injuries earlier, but like, abdominal strain, that sounds worse than the normal, like, sore leg. You know, sore leg has cost people a week and a half. So I'm a little nervous for Grayson there, but I would like to see Kyle unlocked and just say, hey, Jaren's a shooter. Let's not worry about the spacing. Let's actually believe what we say when we say positionless basketball and see what it looks like with Kyle playing more out on the wing.
And Kyle playing more at that point guard position. I think I write about that in the piece, you know, having him be that point forward, but he really is that main facilitator of offense, that main creator off the dribble. I think that you could definitely get to those looks, and that way you can still have an Anderson, Bain, Melton, Tillman, Clark bench unit. That to me is pretty formidable. You've got a bunch of guys that can defend. You've got spacing in Bain, and Melton has cooled off, but he has had a better season shooting the ball. Obviously Tillman has been fine shooting the three, better than we anticipated at least. So there's room for growth there that they can certainly explore with Kyle Anderson. The Kyle Anderson question is fascinating, because Kyle Anderson is a player that obviously was not part of the process of this front office. He was a holdover from the previous one. And Parker, I'll get your take on this. And then Keith's, there's something to be said about bringing in your guys, right? And Kyle Anderson is not a guy of this front office by just the sheer definition of he was not brought in by Zach Kleiman. He was here signed by, you know, Chris Wallace and the folks that were before. So Parker, I'm curious as to, am I overanalyzing? I've been told I overanalyze a lot. So I'm asking you and Keith, I respect your opinions. Is it as simple as the Grizzlies brought in Justice Winslow? They like Justice Winslow better for whatever reason. And you can have that philosophical debate of what you think Justice Winslow is versus what he could be. I think it's fair to Chris Harrington's point that Kyle has been that more consistently than Justice Winslow has. Is it as simple as Justice is their guy and Kyle is not, but maybe he should be? Is it that simple?
I think it's become that simple. I mean, before Justice Winslow came into Memphis, I mean, was he even doing what Kyle Anderson's doing now? I mean, Kyle's averaging 12 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, and he's shooting about 36% from three.
It's relatively simple to argue that this Kyle Anderson is better than Justice Winslow has ever been. Now, if you're banking it off of potential, maybe you can argue Justice could be better, but you haven't seen that yet.
Right. We haven't seen it. And you know, there's also that cost thing, too. It's like, and I'm sure we'll get into this. I know Keith will get into it on his podcast as well. But do you want to sacrifice having $26 million in cap space before Jaren and Ja's extensions kick in? Or do you want to kick the tires on Justice Winslow one more time when you have a better version of him on your roster?
An interesting question. What do you think, Keith?
Well, I think you're right to some degree about, I think last season it was really apparent that Kyle Anderson wasn't one of their guys. I think people forget Kyle Anderson was like 11th on the team in minutes last season for most of the year. And then also in the bubble, in the fourth quarters, they didn't play Kyle Anderson. Like they went, I mean, one of my great frustrations of the team last year, beyond like I've become, you know, this obsessed disciple of D'Anthony Melton, where I don't understand him not playing. But I also point to last season, I was an obsessed disciple of Kyle Anderson and D'Anthony Melton. It's like those guys didn't play last year. And I thought maybe going into the bubble, there was an organizational decision to say, we're playing the young guys, period. I remember the first two games when Jaren Jackson was healthy, like Kyle Anderson and Jonas Valanciunas did not play in the fourth quarters of these very close games to determine if the Grizzlies made the postseason. And it was like, okay, if they're choosing this as an organizational decision to develop the young guys, I'm okay with it. If they think those are their best players, I got a problem because there are better players on the roster who are not playing. And so this year, I think they've given up on that because Kyle's been so overwhelmingly good this season. They're like, okay, he is one of our best players. We still have him on a good contract. They can even give him an extension. And it's like, I think they've acknowledged that, hey, Kyle Anderson's good and he's a weapon. He's a tool almost any team would love to have because he can fit in so many different ways. And so I think they've gotten over that to some degree. That's why, like, we never saw Kyle Anderson get kicked out of the starting lineup. We didn't see, I mean, honestly, if you wanted to try Justice Winslow, giving him backup point guard is not the way to do it. Like, that was absolutely, in my mind, that was a terrible idea to get Justice Winslow going. If you want to get him going, put him on the wing with good players, like
next to Ja Morant.
Yeah, let him play next to Ja Morant. And again, I think Justice Winslow did not do a great job at a point guard because that's not his best thing. His best thing is being able to handle and create when he's not the main guy. Like if he's a secondary creator, he can do that. And if he can fit on the wing, like, I still think he can fit on the wing alongside this team. I think like a Ja Morant, Dylan Brooks, Bane or Allen with like a Winslow and then a big guy, like those lineups work fine. Like, he can mesh in those lineups, even though much like Brandon Clark, Justice Winslow's shot has totally abandoned him. I mean, he's shooting what, like 15% over the last two seasons. So like, I'm not giving up on Justice Winslow. But right now, that experimentation is kind of over. I mean, there's, what, eight games left? Like, we now have to do what we're doing here. And I don't think that Kyle, I don't think he is any more in that, like, he's being excluded because he wasn't one of Zach Kleiman's guys or he didn't go to Duke, which is my personal theory. But I don't think he is, I guess, to answer the question.
I'm interested to see how this offseason goes. And obviously there will be plenty of time for podcasts and articles when the offseason arrives. To me, I think they're going to keep Justice. I think they're going to opt into his option. And I think they're going to keep Kyle Anderson too. I don't think they're going to trade Kyle Anderson because I think Kyle Anderson is Justice Winslow insurance. He's become that, at least. Maybe they weren't smart enough to reach that point. I think you're right, Keith, that they're smart enough to realize that Kyle is good. And I could see Kyle being Justice insurance. If Justice doesn't work out, they just don't re-sign him and everything's fine. They give the extension to Anderson. But Anderson is doing what I believe they wanted Justice to do. I think that's fair to say. Keith, we'll get you out of here on this, and Parker as well. And once again, you're listening to a different version of GBB Live, an abbreviated version, just one segment, talking with Keith Parrish of Fast Break Breakfast, one of the very best NBA podcasts out there. Follow them on Twitter at Fast Break Break. He and John, Chuck, they do a wonderful job over at Fast Break Breakfast. They also, within their Fast Break Breakfast family, have the very best Dynasty Basketball Fantasy League that there is. Yeah. I'm addicted to that thing. Like, I've been updating my roster every day, even though I'm out of the playoffs. Like, I'm one of the worst teams on purpose. I blew it up and tanked.
I've been too scared to join.
Oh, man, it's like, fantastic.
I know it's under the Fast Break Breakfast umbrella with our Patreon supporters, but yes. I'm like, I can't get involved in that. Like, that's
wonderful.
I got too much going on right now. I can't commit to that too.
I do it like at midnight and one in the morning when I'm after I finish my blog work for the night. I do it. It's wonderful. I enjoy it. So shout out to the Fast Break guys for that. But anyway, we'll get you out of here on this. I talked about my three. I had Jaren Jackson Jr. starting, which is the obvious one. I talked about Kyle Anderson being that Justice Winslow-esque player. We talked about Brandon Clark. I agree. That's number three on the overall priorities list. But I still think that's important. Keith and Parker, I wanted to give you guys, and Keith, I'll start with you. I wanted to give you a chance. What do you think is one that I didn't talk about as much or one that you think is really important? Keith, I have a sneaky suspicion. I know what yours is. What is one that you would say, okay, everything Joe said, I can agree with to certain levels and extents. Here is the fourth one that I would add. This is how you fix the Grizzlies, assuming that they need to be fixed. Because again, they're a young team. We talked about that ad nauseum over at GBB. People get impatient. But if you're entering into it saying, okay, we're in the middle of a playoff push, they need to be fixed, they won against the Timberwolves, but they were 1-4 before that, and they gave up 135 points to the Timberwolves. So there's still something off there, even though Minnesota played well. But anyway, I digress. Keith, what would you do to fix, in air quotes, the Memphis Grizzlies?
I'd like to use all three of mine on one.
You know what I'm going to say.
Yeah. Quit being weird about D'Anthony Melton.
Right. It's beyond bizarre.
You have every national writer. You have every Grizzlies writer. You have all of like draft Twitter. You have all of NBA analytics Twitter just being like, hey, you know what's weird? How D'Anthony Melton doesn't play very much. Like, and I, like, I'm very concerned, and I've got a Grits and Grinds Fast Break Breakfast crossover podcast with Steve Jones Jr. coming out on Thursday. And
very nice.
One of the things we talk about is like, is there a relationship problem somehow in the team? And is the roster continuity that we praise for being like, this is amazing. The Grizzlies are going to have like the same team for like 3 years in a row. At some point, does that get bad if you have a situation where it's like, Melton is like, I'm outplaying guys ahead of me and I still don't play. And if everyone's telling him, you know, like, hey, you actually are outplaying the people in front of you. Like, does that become like a negative thing? And that's a situation to, I guess, to monitor going forward. But I mean, for me, it's straightforward. Put Jaren Jackson Jr. back in the starting lineup because we have to see how that goes. And then don't overthink it. Just play your best players who fit. And for me, the best players on the Grizzlies team, it's Ja Morant, it's Dillon Brooks, it's D'Anthony Melton, it's Kyle Anderson. And then we hope it's Jaren Jackson Jr., Jonas Valanciunas. I think the rest works it out. But like, funnel all your minutes at those guys and just like, it's time. There's, you know, 2 weeks left of the season. We're trying to make it. Let's give our best players, I don't know, 30 minutes a night. And then, hey, if Bane's been amazing the last two games, 22 points in both of his last two games. But if Bane's minutes get cut way down, cool. He was the 30th pick in the draft. Like, his time will come. If like Tillman is out of the rotation, it's like, okay, he was a second round pick this year. His time will come. I'm more of like, guys, recognize, first of all, see who your best, you know, 5-6 players are. And then let's just play them and let's you know, turn it over to Ja and Jaren. And if we go down because Jaren never finds his footing, I can live with that. But going down with we're doing the Grayson Bane, Dillon playing small, and it's like the fourth quarter of this game and we've given up 70 points in the second half. That's going to be my frustration.
It has a Haddadi Arenas in Game 7 kind of feel to it sometimes. Like, why are these guys out there?
That's disrespectful. That is so disrespectful.
Me and Steve talk specifically about Haddadi and Arenas. So
I mean, it has a vibe to that. So I know you do. I have a good friend who loved Haddadi too. He gets mad every time I talk bad about Hamed. But I think that Keith makes a good point, Parker, and I think it's also going to tie into what you're going to talk about. If you're going to play your best players and you focus on those six, and statistically, I don't know that there's really a debate. It's Ja, it's Dillon, it's Kyle, it's Jonas. As much as people say I hate on Jonas, you could easily argue even more than last year when people argued it. If you're going off of analytical data, Jonas Valanciunas is their best player. Like, I don't agree with that because I think there's a combination of things. There's a reason why the top 10 cent of the top 10 in win shares per 48 minutes on Basketball Reference, six of them are centers. I think everything needs context. But at the same time, you look at everything, and Jonas is one of their six best players. That is a fact. I'm not disputing that. You've got Ja, you've got Kyle. Jaren is supposed to be. You know, everything that Keith just said, I agree with D'Anthony. I love Desmond Bane. It's reached John Oliver, Adam Driver levels on purpose. But at the same time, I'm cool with Melton being that main guy for the exact reasons that Keith just alluded to. And Melton's going to be around for a while. Melton's going to be around for a while. Bane's going to be around for a while. Those guys are on relatively cheap contracts compared to what they bring. And I think that ties into what you're going to discuss. I am fine with those six or so players being that 30 minute a night, and you play the hot hand or you go by matchups. You know, I've used the example of a fastball pitcher using his changeup as a mix up. You know, mixing it up to use a different type of player or a different type of pitch to go against in a playoff series, for example, if someone goes big on you or someone goes small on you, there's different ways of fitting. Parker, what would you do? What would be your thing to fix the Grizzlies, Parker Fleming?
So I really need Keith to be all ears on this because I think this is going to be the last thing that we ever disagree on. I feel like after I give this take, we will agree on everything Grizzlies. And that is just let Grayson ride out this injury for the rest of the season. And if he is allowed to come back, you shouldn't play him.
Whoa.
Oh, welcome to the club, Parker.
Parker Fleming has abandoned Grayson Allen. This is day on GrizzlyBearBlues.com and on Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Parker Fleming, what is the date? It is May 6th, 2021.
That's right, kids. Bullying works.
Parker has abandoned his love for Grayson Allen. This is a remarkable moment.
It's not an abandoning kind of thing, but it goes to y'all's points too. I mean, for one, I forgot to mention this earlier. For all those takes about the front office sabotaging the season and Kleiman having a say in the rotations, Brandon Clark would not be sitting on the bench getting DNP CDs if that was the case. Because like you alluded to, he was talked about as a third untouchable person. I've heard the same things you have, Joe. It's actually like out there. And it's one of those things too where if it's going to line up with the goal of sustainable success and everything, and also too, he's getting outplayed by the two guys that are supposed to be here long-term with Desmond Bane and De'Anthony Melton. Give those guys the minutes and like give those guys that experience and playoff level exposure. I'm going to lean into the Joe Mullinax campaign of start Desmond Bane, you cowards. So I would start Jaren at the four, even though I hate it. I hate it a lot, but do it. You're putting your five best fit guys out there. I would start Bane at the two, Brooks at the three, because it kind of gives that whole mantra of what Jenkins is looking for with, hey, we want a floor spacer next to John Morant, so it shifts the defense. You get that with Bane. But also, I think, too, if you have that bench unit of Tyus, Melton, Anderson, Clark, and Tillman, and you're having those four guys of Melton, Anderson, Clark, and Tillman switching around Tyus Jones and also running in transition, I feel like that's the kind of bench advantage that you need when it comes to playoff success. And I also think too that Grayson Allen isn't worth benching Brandon Clark, like not at all. And I just think when it comes to playing your best 10 guys, that's your best shot at doing so. So if it comes at the expense of Grayson Allen, so be it. I will say he's had a great season and he's probably put himself in the area where he was going to outprice himself in the free agency anyways. With his salary doubling next season, he's a more enticing trade target. You can throw him in a deal on draft night and go get a free faller in the second round, and you can just kind of be patient. But with Bane playing like this, while also shooting between 7 and 9 threes a game, you need that exposure for him because you never know. He can build his way up to being like a Joe Harris or Eric Gordon-esque player, but you're not going to be able to do that quickly enough if you're not giving him that exposure, if that makes sense. And also, too, it allows De'Anthony Melton to play 25 minutes a night, which is what he needs to be. I know a lot of people want to start De'Anthony Melton, and it doesn't really make sense in a data accumulation era that you didn't really try it. But I also don't think there's nothing wrong with like kind of a super sub kind of thing. And that's something that the coach has alluded to in Zoom calls is he likes the energy and spark that De'Anthony Melton brings off the bench. But also to Keith's point, play him 25, 30 minutes because he deserves it.
Yeah. The data accumulation season where not once did they start Melton, they did one time. I think it was for injury reasons. Like they never once when a healthy squad, they didn't really mix up that starting lineup. It was always, if healthy, they always started the same thing. So that's why pet peeve has become positionless basketball and data accumulation.
I think that it's almost like they had, it was a data accumulation run. That's very clear, but it was on their terms. It wasn't data accumulation where you just opened up the universe and said, hey, let's see how this looks. It was data accumulation. We have our set idea of what we think these guys are, and we're trying to reinforce it. We're trying to make it correct. And it obviously didn't always work.
Maybe it was more sinister. And they're like, what will happen psychologically if we give Melton a DNP?
Yeah, that's
like,
yeah.
What happened? How does Brandon Clark respond to not playing at all? Maybe that was the data accumulation.
Hey, everyone's responded just great. I mean, I feel like there's like this little like resurgence run. I mean, Xavier Tillman is looking like a bench unit Paul Millsap after he got his DNP CDs. Yeah. So And that happened with Melton too. And, you know, I think it's good. Hey, Joe, I hope you don't mind, but can I ask Keith a quick ceiling question with D'Anthony Melton real quick?
Sure. And we can close out on that. Absolutely.
All right. I've done the statistical comparisons, and the popular one is Marcus Smart. Mm-hmm. But do you think there's a universe out there where he's like an elite role player version of like Drew Holiday or Fred VanVleet?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's one of my big frustrations with him not having the opportunity to play a lot of minutes is because, like, I'm not saying he is going to be an all-star. I'm not saying he's the panacea for all the Grizzlies' woes. I am saying there's a universe where this guy who's 22, who's the exact same age as your first round rookie Desmond Bane, there's a universe where this guy becomes Drew Holiday. Like, he's so young, he has these unique skills. Like, he has the block and steal rate, you know, of like a Matisse Thybulle, but he's making now 40% of his three pointers and he's developing a handle. And I'm more like, let's just see what we have. Like, maybe he only ends up being like 5% better of what he is right now. Okay, that's fine, but let's at least take the training wheels off and see if he can actually achieve something even higher and see like maybe there is a universe where he becomes the third star because he's so young. And again, I don't know what the percentage of that is. Like, is there a 2% chance he becomes, you know, something like Drew Holiday? And for me, that's like, well, that's worth playing because there's a 0% chance that Grayson Allen becomes something like that. And I even think there's a pretty low chance that Desmond Bane becomes something like that. Like the unique combination of Melton's athleticism and what he's shown so far. I'm like, if we truly are, if this season truly is, hey, winning is just the icing on the cake. Like we're just trying to find out who we are as a franchise. Then why in the world would you not try to figure out more of what you have? And so that's been kind of the frustration. So yeah, Parker, I think there's a universe where he has a big ceiling and he can become like maybe a lower tier all-star all by himself.
That would be one heck of a acquisition by the Grizzlies going back to complimenting this front office, essentially getting him for practically peanuts. I know Javon Carter had some good run earlier on for the Suns, but he's pretty much out of that rotation almost exclusively now because of Chris Paul being as good as he is. Keith Parrish, thank you so much, buddy. We appreciate your time. You do a fantastic job over at Fast Break Breakfast. We'll be looking for that podcast, taking a deeper look at the Grizzlies rotations and all those fun things with the Grit Grinds crossover. We appreciate your time, buddy. We'll have you back on down the road, of course.
Hey, thanks, guys. Pleasure as always.
Keith Parrish, ladies and gentlemen. For Keith, for Parker, I am Joe Mullinax. Thank you so much for listening to GBB Live. Thank you for subscribing, rating, reviewing 3&D, Core 4, Starting 5, and of course this show over on the GBB Podcast Network. It is much appreciated. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, for Keith, for Parker, I'm Joe. We'll be back next week. Grind forth, Grizz Nation. This is Grizzly Bear Blues Live.